This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show, and we have a full house today.
Full house this morning. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. We got Rob. We got me, Hannah. We got CC.
Yo.
We got... Which one's your mic?
Liv.
We got Liv. We got two new hosts starting soon. Yay!
Yay!
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Morning.
Thanks for coming in so early.
No worries.
Excited to be here.
Yay.
I'm so excited you guys are here. So nice to have more than just me and Rob.
Holding it down.
Yes. How are we all this morning?
Good. Yeah. Excited for a beautiful week ahead of us.
Mm.
Yeah. What's everyone excited for this week?
What am I?
I'm excited for some sun.
Yeah, it's been so nice.
It's spring.
And not being like 4 degrees when I wake up in the morning at 5 a.m.
But you look so good in this little bonnet.
It's a great bonnet.
Yeah.
So cute. What am I excited for?
What are you excited for, Hannah?
It's my friend's birthday today. Happy birthday, Quilla.
Happy birthday.
Shout out, Virgos.
Shout out, Virgo. We're going to take her to the river tomorrow. And maybe have a swim.
Which river?
The Birrarung.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You can have a swim.
Maybe.
That's a chilly.
Maybe a nice chilly little swim tomorrow.
Perfect.
Dopamine hit.
For like 30 seconds. Just like get out.
Yeah.
Sad week for gay people. Why? With Dolly.
Oh, Dolly and Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
R.I.P. to some real ones.
Yeah. I did watch Rocky Horror 2 days ago. It was great. I want to do it again.
You should.
I was really sad because when I was studying in the US, they shut down Dolly World. Like,
what?
What's Dolly World?
It's her theme park that she...
What?
Yeah, she had a theme park.
What?
Surely that's reopening again now.
She has a theme park?
Yeah.
And they shut it down?
They shut it down.
Why did they shut it down?
I don't know. Because they're homophobic.
Yes.
Cause it's
nothing good in this world lasts.
Yeah,
but capitalism just destroys everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a strange place, Dolly World.
Yeah.
So many sparkles. So many wigs.
So much
I saw
denim.
Dolly Parton actually play when
no
I was
way.
Like 10 or 12 or something.
Wow.
With mum. It was great. We had
5 years ago.
Yeah, no, yeah, 5 years ago. Yeah, we had the most nosebleed corner seats ever, but it was amazing.
Did she play for like 3 hours?
She was amazing. She played the sax, she played the banjo.
What?
She played so many instruments. She's amazing.
She does it all. She's awesome.
She did it all. Yeah.
R.I.P.
Oh.
She also donated to Moderna to research the COVID vaccine.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think she won some, like, philanthropy award from Jeff Bezos. And she donated all of the money.
That's good.
We all gasped for a second there.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
She was just like... Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Anyway, we should talk about what's coming up on the show.
Yes.
Before we just talk about Dolly Parton for the next 90 minutes. We're going to start the show off with an interview with Tom Orsag, who is the retired member of the CFMEU and author of an article published in Michael West Media and Declassified Australia called Blue Washing, Corporate Profits and the Destruction of Gaza. It's an article detailing about an investment company just like growing its portfolio on specifically F-35 parts manufacturers across the continent, and also a $150 million loan that the federal government gave to the company to enable it to do so. So that's coming up first thing in the morning. Following that, we're going to hear part of an interview conducted by our comrades Amy Ednat Kiara of Kuya Lawn and Kick Your Fence, as well as Stick Together. She spoke with some refugees in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. So she's speaking with Rashid, Sammy, Brenda, and Rachel, cis, gay, and lesbian refugees from Uganda trying to build a self-sustaining encampment. They just speak about their experiences at the camp and as LGBTQ+ refugees in Kakuma. So we'll be hearing that. And that's potentially a two-part interview if we have time for it as well.
Mm-hmm. And then last up on the show, we'll be joined in the studio by my friend Jiggy, and they'll be telling us all about the campaign that they're a part of on Gumbangir country, which is so-called Coffs Harbour, where they've been protesting logging and future plans of an antimony mine as well. And if we have time at the end of the show, we'll be listening to some excerpts from 3CR's Tuesday Home Time, where Jan Bartlett spoke to Ken Davis, International Programs Manager of APHEDA Union Aid Abroad, who begins this segment here with a background on the current state of education for younger children in Gaza since the intensification of Israel's siege over the last 3 years.
Cool. Let's get into our headlines.
Let's do it.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty. Now one, two, nitty gritty. Now yeah, boom, nitty gritty.
These are the news headlines for Monday, the 31st of August. The Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion is holding its last week of public hearings. The Human Rights Law Centre has submitted a recommendation to the Albanese government to implement the recommendations of the Australian Human Rights Commission's anti-racism framework,
carefully balance the right of every person to live free from racism, hate, and vilification in Australia with the protection of freedom of expression consistent with its international obligations. Enact a Federal Rights Act to provide a set clear of enforceable human rights protections. Invests in evidence-based community-led prevention and education designed with the communities that they serve and delivered as a part of a coordinated whole-of-society strategy and addresses the root causes of hate rather than migration restrictions which misdiagnose the causes of hate and scapegoats communities who themselves are targets of hate. Senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Center, Arif Hussein, said, quote, "An effective response must be grounded in human rights law, follow evidence on what words protect communities from discrimination, hate, and vilification, and safeguard key democratic freedoms like the right to protest. We call on the Albanese government to listen to human rights, legal, and multicultural groups who are united in support for a response that upholds human rights."
In other news this week, on the last day of August, we mark 5 years since the Taliban in Afghanistan have taken back power from US forces. What has been categorised as a gender apartheid, 2.5 million women are denied education, making it the only country in the world banning women from secondary school or higher education. A quote from Nagina Yari, a peace activist on the board of the Nobel Women's Initiative and Window for Hope organisation. "It is the 5 years that women of Afghanistan are banned to attend a school, to attend a secondary education, to attend a university, to become nurses, to become doctors, to become a lawyer. In the last 5 years, almost more than 100 orders are directly came from the Emir of Taliban, from Kandahar, and from 25 of those orders are targeted women and girls in Afghanistan. And it started from the orders to ban rights to education, rights to work, rights to sport, rights to attend a gym, rights to social movements, and even some of the provinces women are banned to attend the male doctors. While the education is banned, no one is allowed to attend the university, and they are putting bans on women to visit male doctors, especially the male dentists, and including the civil society and media space, which is very shrinking. With only 7% of women employed, child marriages in Afghanistan have increased and poverty soars. In the medical field, women have limited medical options. Their presence in media is almost non-existent. Ila, a dental assistant, urges us to speak up for Afghan women, support their right to education and work, keep the world's attention on their situation. We need solidarity, not silence. Let us reflect on these last 5 years and how we may work on deepening international solidarity for women's rights."
In other news this week, on Saturday, the Victorian Pride Centre held its Pride in Employment Career Fair, providing opportunities for LGBTQI plus people to consider what a, quote, inclusive workplace can look like, end quote. Among the companies attending the event was construction company John Holland, Lendlease, Crown, Qantas, Lululemon, and most alarmingly, Amazon, patrons of Palantir supermarket group Coles, and the Australian Defence Force. The Pride Centre describes itself as a, quote, purpose-built home for LGBTQI plus communities where futures are built, end quote. The Trans Action Network, an organisation fighting for queer liberation on Wurundjeri country, said the event was, quote, yet another gut punch. It's no secret like Coles, Amazon and John Holland are exploiting and profiteering off of the cost of living crisis, end quote. They also said that rather demanding better conditions and wages for queer people, the Vic Pride Centre is, quote, enabling this exploitation and platforming the worst of the worst as so-called allies, end quote, and called the event pinkwashing.
In other, In other news this week, and there's a content warning, this headline contains reference to sexual violence. Social Services Minister Tanya Plibersek has called for Labor to consider tighter reforms around the depiction of sexual violence online following the death of a 16-year-old Sydney girl from a suspected sexual choking act earlier this week. A 2024 study found that 57% of 18 to 35-year-olds have experienced strangulation in the bedroom. Yesterday morning, the minister said, quote, "There is something wrong with a situation where 60% of young people say they've experienced strangulation," end quote. She said, quote, "There is no safe way to strangle someone," end quote. Last year, the UK made it a criminal offence to possess or publish pornography showing strangulation or suffocation. Plibersek said Australia should consider implementing the UK's ban in our own laws surrounding strangulation in pornography. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 31st of August, 2026. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
What's that up there on the airwaves? Is it 3AK? Is it the ABC? No, it's 3CR. Faster than Schildberger. More relevant than Mike Willacy. Able to get more writs than Darren Hinch. Yes, 3CR. With music and interviews totally off the planet. With powers and abilities far greater than commercial radio. And who, disguised as a mild-mannered community radio station, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the non-commercial way.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
Your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be!
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. Watch him shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. On the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on a dial. That song was, of course, 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. Rest in peace to her. Last week, Declassified Australia and Michael West Media both published an article written by Tom Orsag entitled Blue Washing, Corporate Profits and the Destruction of Gaza. It explains the growing corporate investment into F-35 parts manufacturers across the continent and how the federal government props it up. We are now joined on the line by the article's author, Tom Orsag, a retired member of the CFMEU and the article's author. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rob.
Tom, in the article you describe growing corporate investment into F-35 parts as, quote-unquote, a web. Can you unravel this web for us?
Yeah, sure. Look, I started up in the CFMEU for Palestine and, you know, very much saw myself as part of the Palestine movement. And one of the things that came up when you read the newspapers would be a graphic of an F-35 plane. Often like ABC or The Guardian would have this picture. And then it would list all these companies that made all the parts. So I just sort of stuck that on a board. And the companies that ended up I found out about were Levitt, Moran Precision, Rosebank, which also known as RUAG, Quickstep, and TAE Aerospace. Now, they're all listed on that graphic. And then I just put them, you know, I had it one side. And then in May this year, they had an Indian Pacific Naval Expo, basically arms makers in Perth. And I wanted to know who was running that. So I looked up them, and they're called the AMDA Foundation. And they run the Avalon Air Show, Land Forces, which, you know, it was in Melbourne a couple of years ago. And at the bottom of their website was a news article. And the news article says there's one company, Quickstep, had been acquired by a company called CPE Capital in May of 2025. And I'm thinking, well, I've heard that name, Quickstep. And then I just follow that thread. And CPE Capital has a subsidiary, and that's called ASDAM, and that stands for the Australian Sovereign Defence and Advanced Manufacturing. And then, so I start to look at CPA Capital, I look at ASDM, and so CPA, let's call it that, they bought Levitt and Moran in 2019. And then in 2022, they bought Rosebank and TAE Aerospace. And then finally, a quick step in May of 2025. So in the process of that 6 or 7 years, one company has bought 5 of the parts makers for the F-35.
So it's something like 75 parts of the F-35 are made here in Australia. How many of those parts are owned by... are made by companies owned by CPE Capital?
Five of them. But when you see the graphic, they just list them individually. So it just looks like they're small individual companies. And yeah, there are about 75 odd ones. But if you look at the main one they tended to use was a Defence Department graphic, and that listed, say 15, 20 of the main ones. You have to scroll down further down in the graphics to see all 70, and I've seen all 70. They're the main ones that stand out in the graphic that they use.
So how much profit has CPE Capital made because of all of this?
Well, that's an interesting question in the sense it's a private company, so you're not listed on a stock exchange and you don't have to report their results. However, if you go on the CPE Capital website, it says they're a private equity capital fund. They're Australian, and they've been managing investments since 1987, and they've made $4.5 billion from 1987. And then in the news report that was just read following it, after the last two were acquired, well, the second last two, Rosebank and TAE were acquired, the Financial Review said owning those four companies would give CPE a revenue of $400 million. So you can sort of kind of guess from that what the profit might be, you know, given the usual percentage. And they're founded by two guys, a guy called Bill Ferris, who used to be Australia's Austrade representative, and a guy called Joseph Sikorsky. Now, Ferris has got an Order of Australia for philanthropy, and Straczynski's got the Australian Human Rights Watch Committee. So I just kind of found that odd that you've got these sort of humanitarians that are making money from, you know, building parts for the F-35.
And you mentioned in the article that the federal government is sort of involved in helping to prop up CPE Capital. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Because once you have the thread and you just keep following the thread, okay, then you go, all right, well, I'll check out who ASDAM is, and then they got a loan in November of 2025 of $150 million from the Ministry of Industry. But the Ministry of Industry has this fund, and it's called the National Reconstruction Fund Corporation. And that was set up in September 2023 by the Labor government. And that's a fund that has $15 billion in it. And if you look at their web page, they go, well, we invest in all sorts of manufacturing for Australia, renewable energy, transport, etc. That's what they say in some of the news stories. But they've actually got seven areas, what they call priority areas, and defence is one of them. And so there's this kind of smoke and mirrors thing that, you know, it's under the umbrella of the Ministry of Industry, but it's a separate fund which allocates, you know, who's going to get, you know, loans from this company, from this fund. And I emailed them and they said, well, defence is one of our areas. And I said, well, what percentage is defence? And they just won't say. They won't tell you what percentage of their investments are going into defence.
I think it's quite scary. That's quite a scary response. Now, Tom, in the article, you also talk about your investigation being sort of conducted through what you call open source intelligence.
I guess
you've kind of hinted at it with your answers to the previous questions, but what exactly has that looked like?
Well, that's just a fancy journalistic term for any articles that appear in the public domain. So once I had the name CPE Capital as them, you just go to trade magazines, industry magazines, you know, manufacturing kind of online magazines that you and I wouldn't normally read, right? And then an activist from Geelong in the pro-Palestine movement pointed out to me their local paper. And, like, I'm not normally... That's why I said it's a regional paper. I don't normally read the Geelong paper. And she pointed out that, you know, Quickstep had been taken over. And in that article it says Quickstep's owned by CPE. Okay, that's really interesting. So it's just whatever's out there online in the public domain. But why the article was important, because no one had put this thing together, right? You see the graphic of the plane and you think they're all separate companies. Actually, they're, you know, one of them owns five. And then the other thing is that when you follow the thread, the minister at the time that set up the fund was Ed Husic. Now, Ed Husic is pro-Palestine, but after the May 2025 election, they because of the Labor Party's factional alliances, they dumped him as the minister, and the New South Wales Senator, Tim Ayres, was appointed as the Minister for Industry. Now, the interesting thing about that is that he's the former State Secretary of the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union. And on the fund, the industry fund, the NRFC fund, that gave the $150 million loan in November of last year is the current national president of the AMWU, a guy called Glenn Thompson. So once you find this stuff, it's all in the public domain, and you just keep searching and keep looking. And obviously it's a moving story. The loan only came through in 2025.
And you're talking about the loan that the government gave
to
CPE Capital, right?
Yeah. The $150 million is given by the NRFC. And so I emailed the media union on NRFC and I said, well, how much does the minister know? Like, you're a fund and he's a former, you know, official of the AMWU. On the board of that fund, which allocated the 150, is the current national president of AMWU. How much, you know, does the minister know? And of course, I got nothing. The media replies were basically all very disappointing. Because these funds and government bodies have media units where you can email the questions.
Yeah, what surprised you about this? Research journey, especially considering, you know, so much of this should be information that should be public and declared by the government in the first place, right?
Yeah, well, what surprised me is the lack of serious media responses. I mean, I emailed Ed Husic, he's a former minister, and, you know, he's come out as pro-Palestine, and yet both his electoral office and his parliamentary office, no answers. I've emailed the Tim Ayres' office. They give a reply which basically tells you nothing. I emailed the NRFC. I've even emailed CPE Capital and ASDAM. And again, no response. And in the article I say, I actually ring up CPE and said, oh, did you get my email? And they go, what email? I said, I'm Tom. I'm doing the story about your investment in the F-35. Oh, yeah, we got the email. I said, oh, can I speak to someone in the media? Oh, no, we'll let them know that you rang. I emailed Glenn Thompson of the AMWU. And there's another union official on the board, a guy called David Walton from the Australian Workers Union. And again, no response from them. So it's sort of like, you know, the government is always announcing arms makers contracts that they're giving, you know, Elbit, Rafael, all these Israeli arms makers and missile makers and drones, etc. But they haven't really advertised this one. They might put a press release from the fund, but they don't play it up big time. They don't put it out in the media. And the minute you ask the question, they just clam up and, you know, basically, you know, won't get you any information.
I'll just remind our listeners that we're currently on the line with Tom Orsag, a retired member of the CFMEU, and the author of an article published both in Michael West Media and Declassified Australia last week, titled Blue Washing, Corporate Profits and the Destruction of Gaza, detailing how growing corporate investment into F-35 parts manufacturers across so-called Australia and a $150 million loan given by the federal government to prop up one of the companies. Tom, I'm also curious to know a little bit more about this fund. Is there any other companies or like weapons manufacturers that they've given money to that you found?
Yeah, no, I didn't actually, and that's a very good question. I mean, they've got an online site, and you can basically go on it. It's called the National Reconstruction Fund Corporation, all they call it NRFC Corp, and What stood out for me was the ASDAM and the five F-35 parts makers, because that was what I was most interested in. But the fund has been going since September 2023. So, yeah, you could, theoretically, you could just go back through the press releases going back to that time and see who else they've lent money to. And, of course, that's a bigger story. And no, a good question. I hadn't thought about going that far, because I was really just focused on CPE and the ASDM. But, yeah, you could go and go backwards from November 2025 or forwards from November 2025. And see who else they've lent money to, because I'm sure they have. There's no doubt they would have lent money to some other company.
I mean, I would expect that, given that this is taxpayer money, all of this would be publicly available information to find.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I wrote the story, but I just want to emphasise to people that it's not, you know, there's no secret to it. It's just basically you find a word here and there, a company here and there. You follow the thread. You follow the thread where it takes you, and then you've got something to aim at and keep going at. And you know, I was focused purely on this particular parts maker, this particular, you know, it's an Australian company. But defence is seen as one of their, you know, priority areas. So that, I didn't want my article to blow out to be too long. So it was sort of like, I'm just going to focus on this. But you're right. I think there's a whole other story on who else has been getting, government loans, because CPE is a private company, private equity capital. You know, why does it need government loans? And it's got contracts. All those five companies have a contract with Lockheed Martin and the F-35. They make the parts for the Bombay doors, the tails. They service the engines, Pratt and Whitney engines. So yeah, there's plenty of money to be made for them without having to, you know, ask the government for some sort of corporate welfare.
Well, let's hope that further threads are pulled and more of these companies are exposed into the public eye. Tom, there's only a few moments left. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
What I wanted to write the story is because the Palestine issue and the genocide that Israel created has been denied by the government and denied their involvement, and Declassified Australia and Michael West Media and those sort of online news places have been doing a fantastic job in terms of bringing these kind of things to light. I don't know if you heard about the government says, oh, we just send stuff to Lockheed Martin America and we don't know where the parts go to after that. And I think this Declassified, they found out they were flying F-35 parts on Thai Airways directly to Israel. There was no hiding it, like going to the US. And then recently they stopped doing that, and the classifieds found out they're sending the parts via Lockheed Martin, you know, to America and then straight away onto Israel. So the idea that the government doesn't know the extent of the involvement, and Penny Wong said, oh, we make the non-lethal parts, and, you know, Michael West Media, went ripped through that because, you know, the parts that they make are the Bombay doors from the stealth bomber that opened, you know, to bomb civilians in Gaza. So I just wanted to add to that. I could see from reading a lot of articles and the reports that there are so many arms makers, there's so many parts makers, someone's making a lot of money, and the idea that the government doesn't know about it just really rang hollow.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show, Tom, and good luck with more research.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and you put me onto a good little thread there, Rob. Thanks very much.
That was Tom Orsag, a retired CFMU member and author of the article published in both Michael West Media and Declassified Australia, titled Blue Washing, Corporate Profits and the Destruction of Gaza, explaining how growing corporate investment into F-35 parts manufacturers across the continent and how the federal government props it up. We will put the link to the full article in the podcast notes. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show. Stay tuned.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au. Wasting time in the unemployment lines.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our land.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR 855 AM on the dial. Next up, we're going to bring you a segment by host of Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, as well as Stick Together, Amy Chiara. She spoke with refugees in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. In this recording, Amy speaks to Rashid, Sammy, Brenda, and Rachel. They are gay and lesbian refugees from Uganda trying to build a self-sustaining encampment that will hopefully have greater longevity than Block 13, a previous encampment which was attacked and disbanded. LGBT plus refugees in Kakuma experience discrimination and violence from other refugees, Kenyan authorities and UNHCR employees. This was before Block 13 was disbanded and before US aid pulled out. A content warning that in this segment we hear accounts of sexual assault and unwanted pregnancies. Stay tuned.
Would you like to start off by telling us how long each of you have been at Kakuma?
Okay. I've been there like right now is 4 years. 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, could be four or four plus. Then Sammy, maybe you can tell her.
Well, I've been here for over 4 years now.
soon being five in a 2 month period.
Well, Rachel, how long have you been here?
I've been there for quite 3 years now.
Okay, and Brenda?
It's been four, just like you guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So most of us are five, four, three, around there. Mm.
And do you all identify as LGBT plus refugees?
Yes, yes. My sisters here are lesbians, and for us...
And is that how you came to be a refugee, or was it because of war?
Actually, after the anti-gay bill was passed back in our home country, Uganda, yeah, so life became a little bit harder for us. It just even mere surviving day to day, you know, you couldn't get like a taxi from one place to another. We began feeling like we are hunted down. And if they caught you, you could be beaten by mob justice to death, you know, and stuff like that. So life became extremely challenging for us, whereby we had to move to the next country to seek just safety. Our education perished and life came to a standstill. So that's how we ended up in Kenya, in Kakuma refugee camp. But life here hasn't been fair at all. You know, the refugee camp conditions, I mean, a lot happens here that is not written or it's not televised outside there. So that's how we ended up here. Fear of persecution and all the challenges that we had faced, segregation, you know. The level of homophobia that was happening back home, it was too much for us to handle. And for the sake of safety for life, I mean, I've had friends who have lost their lives.
Let's talk a little bit about life in the camp. So you were just saying you were fleeing persecution. Yeah. My understanding from having some contact with our mutual friend several years ago was that life in camp still is a place of persecution, of violence, and sometimes violent crimes and murders. Is that still the case?
Yeah, that's still the case. But now at times when we form small groups like these ones, whereby we decide to take a shelter, like we understand ourselves like 10 to 15 people, that can at least provide some bit of security, you know, the solidarity that we have. We are together. If something happens to one, we are all called up. We are summoned, then we are around. That has tried to improve the security issue, because now we live in groups. So it's better than living a solitary life here. So our community, if something happens to one, we are always concerned. That's how we have tried to manage the issue of insecurity. You know, some you can at least add on that, some of the challenges that are faced. Yeah.
Well, it is a fact that this place is not ideal. I mean, we are highly discriminated, both from fellow refugees and the staff from the UNHCR itself, the law enforcement. You know, there is a lot of social injustices that, you know, are just underway on a daily basis, you know. And we have nothing to do about it, unfortunately, other than raising our voices and reaching out to people like you to help extend, you know, our voices of cry and stuff. So just like how we got to flee from our country or our countries, it is the same scenario. It is always the same case scenario, even down here. So just like Rashida said, if it's not... if it's not for the groups that we formed, I mean, we are highly persecuted, highly, highly persecuted. We fight so much to try to relate with which is close to impossible, you know, trying to relate to the communities and stuff and other people. You know, mind you, this is a place of over 250,000 people. And worst case scenario, we have to be the least in numbers. That's for a fact. So now just imagine over 100,000 eyes on you, homophobic, the law enforcement inclusive. So you can understand how tough that is, you know, for a human being, you know. Yeah, so basically, life here isn't ideal at all. I mean, the end goal would be, you know, finding settlement elsewhere, you know. Because even, I mean, surviving, day by day surviving is not just a hassle, but everything is life-threatening, you know?
You've also, you're talking about groups. Were any of you involved in Block 13? Some people might be aware of Block 13 from some years ago. They made some international awareness of their situation in Kakuma and they had some attention in the United Nations. Were any of you involved in that group?
Well, us around here, no.
Okay.
But I do know about Block 13. I mean, I can give you a little bit of insight on how, I mean, the force tried to influence something, but of course, the UNHCR or the United Nations was highly guilty. So they literally had to dismantle it from within. So that's why it never, you know, had any fruits.
So it's not there at the moment, but that cannot stop us from forming another group, you know, coming together. Yes.
And so what you're working towards is trying to be self-sufficient as possible.
Exactly. You know, like finding projects that can help empower the LGBT community here, like the poultry projects, you know, the solar projects, and, you know, try to build better shelters. We believe that through those projects, we can become self-independent, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, we don't have to beg to survive. Such a project like a poultry project, it can raise employment opportunities. It can be a source of food. You know, we can sell the eggs. I mean, it can at least try to fight the depression and idleness and employment that comes up in the mix of being here at the camp. I mean, people are depressed here. You wake up, you have nothing to do. Even if you wish like doing something, you have no proper papers or documentation that can allow you to do something, you know. But if we wake up and have like projects like poultry, that can be a milestone or a turning point in our lives, you know. Now, like for the ladies, yeah, they have been quiet, but at least they can also tell you their side, you know. They lack sanitary pads, you know, the hygiene is so poor, the sleeping, the shelters are so poor, you know. When the rain comes, it floods. And when it's hot, it's too hot to stay inside, you know. I don't know why they are quiet, but they can tell us. Also, they can tell you their side of the story, the challenge they face as ladies here at the camp.
Hello again. This is Brenda.
Yep.
Life this side is so hard, whereby, like, as ladies, we find a problem of pads. You have to use pads like 2 days, and you know, we end up getting sick, and there is no medication, so life is not easy this side, and we have no justice this side. Some of us are even raped, whereby you can't even, you know, tell anyone. You just end up getting depressed. You end up getting depressed, and life is so hard this side.
I'm really sorry to hear that. I imagine there are also some women in the camp with children.
Yeah. And then children are really suffering. We just have one meal a day. One meal, and that's it. Like today we just add porridge alone.
That's not enough.
Yeah, that's not enough. You know, we can just been given just 1 kg of rice and 1 kg of beans, which is not enough for us. Not enough to build our health. And when it comes to those sanitary pads, they're not of good quality. They end up affecting us. We get UTI, which, you know, it's so common for a girl who's not taking care of his hygiene. Yeah, so basically life is just not find this side. Yeah.
And you've been there since US aid funding has been cut by the Trump government. Have you felt that yourselves?
So deep and so tough nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there people living with HIV AIDS in your group?
Yeah, so many of them.
Yeah. And I imagine that the USAID funding helped provide medication for that?
No.
No?
It was cut, yeah.
It was cut, yeah.
Mm.
You questioned about whether some ladies over here have babies, right? And children.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I would really love to put out there are the babies. Just like you're being told that every basic need is lacked around here. So mothers lose lives and leave babies. So imagine a six-month-old baby that requires baby formula or initially required, you know, breast milk, and it isn't there no more. And they require baby formulas. So that's not something that is being given for free or on the food items. So we literally have to find ways on how to purchase it from the, you know, the supermarkets, and it's highly pricey. So now imagine just boiling water for a baby. That's not it, you know. They even get infected and eventually lose their lives. So pre-toddlers and babies and even toddlers that have already, you know, lost their mothers. So it's something I didn't want to leave behind.
That raises one question for me. You don't have to have an answer for this, and anyone can answer this, but are there abortion services in Kakuma for women who don't want to have a baby?
Nah.
So if a woman is assaulted and has a baby from that assault at camp, they have to go through with the baby.
They have to, and some of them even commit suicide or try committing suicides.
I see.
I have a lot of suicide cases, and there is no therapy, there is nothing. So we just hold each other's hands and just go through it.
I see.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that has raised a huge number of, you know, mothers losing lives or babies losing lives. So, yeah.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. We were just listening to a segment by Amy Chiara from Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, where she spoke with refugees in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. She was speaking with Rashid, Sammy, Brenda, and Rachel. Please share their website at queerpride.africa, and funds will go to food and creating self-sustaining projects like raising chooks to sell eggs for further projects. We're now joined in the studio by Jiggy. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing today?
I'm good. Easing into the day.
Monday morning. Do you want to start off by telling me a bit about the campaign that you've been a part of in Gumbangia country, or so-called Coffs Harbour?
Yeah, awesome. I live up on Gumbangia country, which is like in the north of so-called New South Wales. It's really known for its beautiful forests and rivers that are home to a lot of critically endangered species like the koala and the greater glider, and also the red-tailed black cockatoo. Unfortunately, New South Wales government has a really long history of extraction on Gumbangia country, specifically around logging critical habitat, which has been happening for a very long time, but specifically the past 5 years, things have really ramped up after the Black Summer bushfires in 2019, kind of like in New South Wales, 2/3 of koala habitat was lost to the fires. And we were really lucky on Gumbangia country that a lot of forests were protected from the fires, and now it's like kind of a really relying on these forests endangered species as like critical habitat to help them breed and get their population back up. But still, forestry in New South Wales has been doing a lot of logging over the past years. So yeah, I've been involved in a campaign kind of calling for the protection of these forests and recognizing the like importance of these forests and why they need to be protected, and I guess, to stop logging on Gumbengi country.
Mm. And can you tell me a bit more about Pine Creek and where Pine Creek is and, yeah, what kind of forest is there?
Mm, of course. So Pine Creek Forest is, like, on the coast of Gumbengi country. It borders Bongul Bongul National Park, which is a big, beautiful forest along the coast, and then also Bindari National Park, which is up towards Dorrigo, where you have the Great Dividing Range, kind of where it starts to meet the sea. Pine Creek State Forest has been like a big focus point for the community recently, as it is referred to as the Forest Bridge, which is just like a massive land in between these two national parks that are recognized as like intergenerational significance for koalas by national parks. And at the moment, that's where they're logging in Pine Creek State Forest. And they're starting to log what is the proposed forest bridge. And yeah, community's pretty much been calling for this forest bridge to be protected so that koalas can move freely between the mountains and the coast, which have like super high populations of koalas. And it seems like pretty common sense that if you've got a bunch of koalas up in the mountains and on the coast, that you would protect the forest bridge they need to cross between so that the populations can cross-pollinate. But yeah, so Pine Creek is like near so-called Coffs Harbour, maybe like 20 minutes away. It's a really beautiful forest. It's got a lot of mountain bike tracks, and also just plays an important role in like our community, in how people walk there, ride their horses, their dogs, camp there, and a lot of mountain biking. So yeah, community's definitely pretty upset about the logging and destruction that's happening there.
Mm. And so how have you guys been protesting the logging, and how long have these protests been going on for?
Yeah, so they've been logging there for almost a century, really, in bits and bobs, but specifically the past, like, 5 to 6 years, there's been like a much more escalated resistance of the logging after the Black Summer bushfires, and just like many science surveys have been done to realize the significance of this forest. About 2 years ago, the community came together and mobilized for 1 year at Pine Creek Blockade Camp, where they were basically camped out at the entrance of Pine Creek, holding space and calling for machines to not come into the forest. It was a pretty successful camp. There was hundreds of people that came through and stayed at the camp. It was a really beautiful moment for community. And the machines didn't go into the forest for that year and the year following. And then recently in June, we saw the machines have now gone in, and we recently had a blockade camp that was removed by police, but we had two actions. Indy suspended themselves in a tree about 30 meters above the ground, with life-supporting ropes going across the road to block machines from going in, and was supported by about 50 people on the ground holding space, and including Auntie Allison, who's a senior law woman and a Gumbengi elder, and community was rallied there to try not let the machines in, but was responded with high police presence, and ultimately the camp was removed and everyone was given a move-on order. That day, the machines went in, and then 2 days later, Viv, also a local from Gumbengi country, locked on to a logging harvester to make sure that logging didn't happen on that day. So yeah, we've had like a pretty sustained resistance in like what we'd call non-violent direct action, and community resistance in having blockade camps and going to parliament, working and supporting Gumbengi mob, to take things to court, which has had some success in the past, but I guess exploring all the avenues we can to try get this forest protected.
Mm. And native forest logging was ended in Victoria, also called ended, in 2020. Do you see that for a future for New South Wales as well? And do you, what do you see for these sorts of campaigns for pushing that to possibly be in the future of New South Wales?
Mm, yeah, it's an interesting one. Pine Creek itself is like quite divided, as certain sections of it are what we'd call so-called plantation, where they might have been logged like 60 or 80 years ago, like selective logging, and because of that have now been labeled plantation and are being clear felled, where it's like they're just wiping every tree off the landscape. And if you look at like a forestry map, there's very unclear boundaries of what's native and what's plantation. And, you know, obviously as a koala, you know, if you're in a native forest and there's a bunch of gum trees there and 20 meters to your right is like so-called plantation, but it's got the same trees that have been there for like almost a century, you're not going to notice much of a difference. So on Gumbangi country, we have like a bit of a, I guess, difficult way to navigate, like calling for an end to native forest logging, but also calling for an end to like destruction of critical habitat that might be labeled as plantation. And yeah, the Coffs Harbour region is like, has, yeah, big history in native forest logging. Recently, the Labor government did protect like a large amount of native forests and turn that into what is now going to be the Great Koala National Park, because they've just, after like a massive community resistance and like calling for protection in parliament as well, they finally responded to that, but it did take them 3 years longer than they said they were going to, and a lot of trees felled in that period. But yeah, I guess the ultimate goal is like working towards finding more sustainable ways to source timber and protecting forest, whether that be native forest or critical habitat that is labeled as plantation.
And so also, can you tell me about the future of mining on Gumbangir country, and if there's a growing resistance to that as well, and what the goal is with this future mine?
Yeah, so I guess coming back to like the history of extraction on Gumbangi country, about 60 years ago, there was an antimony mine up at Dorigo up in the mountains that shut down 50 years ago. And I guess that's recently started or trying to start back up. I guess antimony is like a strategic critical mineral. And in 2024, the American government signed a contract that worth $250 million basically to source more antimony for like military independence, as China kind of produces most of the antimony in the world. So I guess 2 years ago, America made it pretty clear that they needed to source more antimony. And then last year, we saw the Australian government create a $1.2 billion critical minerals strategic reserve to also source more antimony, which is, I guess, then created now 9 exploration licenses have been given out to American mining companies on Gumbangi country to basically drill around and explore where there is antimony. Up at Dorigo, up in the mountains, you have what is kind of known as one of the biggest underdeveloped antimony deposits in the world, and has like heaps of antimony there, but there's been big community pushback on it. Antimony is like used for flame retardants, ammunition and batteries, and also night vision and infrared goggles. So it's got a lot of different uses, but ultimately like causes a lot of harm to the environment. It can poison the waterways and the soil and do pretty irreversible damage that can harm ecosystems, animals, and also the 100,000 people that live in the Coffs Harbour region that rely on the Clarence water catchment there. So I guess there's been a bit of a pushback to antimony mining, but at the moment an American company called Tungsten Minerals has received an exploration license to kind of see what they can mine and what the next steps of like extracting this antimony would be.
And do you know when they're planning on starting this extraction for antimony?
Yeah, so at the moment, we've seen that they've just started test drilling, and which just is bringing in some machinery and just starting to do exploratory drilling up around Dorigo Mountain to see where the antimony is and how deep down it is. I guess we're trying to push back as hard as we can now to make sure that it doesn't go any further and that the government doesn't allow like a mining and extraction lease, I guess, or license. But up at Armidale, which is like an hour west of Dorigo, we've seen Hillgrove Mine just start back up, which also got shut down about half a century ago, and they've just received all their licenses to start mining in July, which is pretty distressing. When they were mining like 50 years ago, there was a contamination trail that was found 350 kilometers downstream in the river, all the way going to the Pacific Ocean. And yeah, I guess it's just been made very evident by a lot of like scientists and ecologists and local community members, the harm that is posed from antimony mining, especially when it's like ultimately just going so, you know, this country, Australia, and also America can have more military independence with the kind of geopolitical tensions rising between like these Western countries and China.
And so what's the campaign looking like in locally against these two mines, the one that's about to be happening near Dorrigo and the one currently in Armidale?
So I guess trying to kind of build some like community momentum against these mines and also against the logging, seeing that they kind of like really flow into each other, with like really important forests being logged and clear felled, and then also the waterways being poisoned with antimony and arsenic, like comes together into just this like habitat destruction on Gumbangi country that's going to affect like animals, ecosystems and community. So I guess we're kind of at a stage of trying to rally together and like have some yarns and also support like Gumbangi elders in like a call for machines off country. Keen to see where things go in the next few months, but hoping that like myself and my community can work together to try and get the word out really far and build some momentum in like really saying like we're not going to allow this to happen and doing whatever is necessary to make sure that, you know, the mine doesn't go ahead, whether that looks like what we've done in the past, like mobilizing and having a blockade camp, using nonviolent direct action, or taking government to court and just trying to get, yeah, recognize the like cultural and ecological importance of Gumbangi country and just the harm that's being done in like the forest being felled and the rivers being poisoned.
And so how can people get involved in this campaign and find out more information on this?
Yeah, so probably on social media is the best way to get involved. On Instagram and Facebook, you can follow at Save Pine Creek and also Bellingen Activist Network, as well as Friends of Pine Creek is a website and a Facebook group that has heaps of information and access to all of the surveys that have been done in Pine Creek State Forest, and Lock the Gate Nambucca is also doing some stuff on the antimony mine. So there's kind of a few different groups, but the idea is that we'll kind of like bring all that information and connection together on Save Pine Creek and Bellingen Activist Network and try make like getting involved, whether you're like local or far away, accessible, and try get some big events happening that people can come up to support and get engaged.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming onto the show, and I'm excited to have you on again when these actions are happening.
Yes, thank you so much, and have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too. I want to drop food, not bombs. Hot trains, volunteer at every info shop. I want to give free therapy out in the park. Go to free school, just have practice. When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter. Food Not Bombs.
One Nation is hoping to break through in the Victorian election. Anti-racists are out to stop them. Unite Against Racism has called a public forum at Trades Hall in Carlton. 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the 9th of September. Be there to hear great speakers and get involved. Unite Against Racism is initiated by the Refugee Action Collective, a 3CR supporter.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be!
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. We're about to play a track by Mudrat. Language warning for this one. This track is called You Don't Care About Poor People. Stay tuned. Hello.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Champ, easy drinks.
Thanks, mate.
Who was the bloke you were just talking about?
Big Johnny's on the trot, he's a couple deep. Another night with the boys out on Chapel Street. It's been a hard week's work when you hardly work. But now you can't eat dirt when your dad's a cheap. Oof. The big dog and he's off the leash. He's got his sight now set on a piece of meat. He says, hey, where you from? You look so exotic. Somehow that charm fell short of hypnotic.
Don't care about poor people. 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 Don't care about poor people.
does sound frustrating, mate. Nobody cares about poor people. What if I told you there was one enemy, one war with me, comrade?
This is a man with the ace in hand. He adds fuel to the fire of a rageful clan. Cause the pumpkins are dried as he raids the land. And never know it's the fault if the skin's more tan. So please on and die just to raise a fee.
And that was, what was it? It was We Don't Care About Poor People by Mudrat. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show. Stay tuned.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Arnica Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
And that almost brings us to the end of the show. Mudrat last night was really fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you left early.
I left early.
Sucks to suck, I got no drink. It was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jiggy was there. We danced. It was good. It was good fun.
I really loved Not My King. Your King.
They were great. Not My King.
They were so sick.
Yeah, they were so good. So many good.
And that little, the opera singer.
Oh, Zelda. Singing
this anti-police song.
Singing F the Police in Ava Maria.
Yeah. So beautiful.
So beautiful. The outfit was great.
And this was at the Rock Against Racism event held at Camp Sov last night.
Yes. Yeah. It was really fun. It was a beautiful day for it as well.
Really beautiful day, yeah.
It's been beautiful and sunny, sunshine.
Yeah. Also solidarity with all of the people yesterday who counted the fascists.
Yes.
On the streets. We haven't really talked about it, but I hope everyone out there is getting a very well deserved rest.
And looking after themselves.
It's such a big day to go out and put your body on the line like that. Especially countering both the police and the fascists.
Yeah. So, should we do a little rundown of what we had on the show today?
Yes.
So, last on the show, we were joined live in the studio by Jiggy, speaking all about this campaign that they've been a part of, protesting logging and plans of an antimony mine. You can be updated by this campaign and get involved by looking up at Save Pine Creek on Facebook and Instagram. You can also look up Bellingen Activist Network, Friends of Pine Creek, Save Pine Creek, and Lock the Gate Nambuka for those campaigns and find out more information.
Yeah, and before that we heard a part of an interview that Amy Chiara of Kiwi Lawn and Kick Your Fence as well as Stick Together did with a group of refugees in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, speaking about being queer refugees in Kakuma, an encampment in Uganda, as well as the violence from other refugees, Kenyan authorities, and UNHCR employees that they faced following the disbanding of Block 13, a previous encampment, and US aid pulling out. You can, of course, listen to more content from Amy. The full interview is on their podcast site, 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn. And you can also listen to Amy every second Friday, at 9:30 till 10 a.m. And you can listen, please listen to the full.
And on Stick Together on Wednesdays.
And on Stick Together on Wednesdays. At 8:30 of course. AM. We love to hear from Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be playing more from Amy interviewing queer refugees in Kakuma. Please support those refugees by sending funds or sharing it. Their website is queerpride.africa, and funds will go to food and creating self-sustaining projects like raising chickens to sell eggs for further projects. And the show began with a conversation with Tom Orsag, who is a retired member of the CFMEU and author of the article titled Blue Washing, Corporate Profits and the Destruction of Gaza, which was published both in Declassified Australia and Michael West Media over the week. And it talks about growing corporate investment into F-35 parts manufacturers across the continent and how the federal government gave $150 million loan to one of these companies to ensure they can keep investing in weapons manufacturers. We'll put the link to the full article in our podcast notes. But for now, we'll get out of here and stay tuned for Women on the Line.
Bye.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.